So that gospel story we just heard from Luke's gospel is, you know, one of those weird sort of end times Bible stories that this year may not seem quite so weird. Jesus is talking about distress and confusion and fear and foreboding and nations being in conflict. And even the environment itself going through some kind of catastrophe. The Paris climate talks are starting this coming week, a sort of slow-moving catastrophe. And I think we live in something of a catastrophe culture, actually, since 9/11. I mean, anytime you turn on cable news, there's always this news alert and then something bad happening. And there are a lot of bad things happening. Persistence of terrorism, ongoing racial injustice and conflict, violence, random seems, guns, seems like every week, economic disruptions and uncertainty that affect all of us in some way, a political discourse that seems to get worse and worse every election cycle, fear of those who are different in various ways, a world that seems somehow less stable and less secure than we expected. And so many narratives and spaces that once brought cohesion seem to be unraveling. Jesus tells his disciples to be on guard, to be attentive, to be focused, to be present. And he says, you know, don't be drunk, right? Don't be dissipated in, in partying and you know, substance abuse. And that is certainly a struggle, perhaps for some of us. But I think if Jesus were saying this today to disciples, he wouldn't say, don't be drunk. He would say, get off your devices, right? And pay attention, okay? It's hard to be focused and attentive, right, and present in an age of fragmented attention. We are more preoccupied with technology in our society, even as community is unraveling more and more. Community ties seem more and more tenuous. I think there are some fundamental shifts going on in how we relate to one another in our society today. Sherry Turkle's an MIT technology and social science professor who, in her last book a few years ago, Alone Together, interviewed a woman named Kara in her 50s from Portland, Maine. And Kara said something very interesting. She said, no one is where they are. They're talking or texting to someone miles away. I miss them. I miss them. No one is where they are. Just ride a bus or go to an airport waiting lounge or go to a playground, go out to dinner. Any public space these days, we're all in our private digital worlds, turned away from each other. Or even go to your own dinner table, right? Your own home, perhaps. So last week in the Faith Forum, we had a really rich discussion about Sherry Turkle's new book, Reclaiming Conversation, and how digital devices are reshaping our experience of each other in the world. And I have to say, there were some very painful stories shared of deep interpersonal conflicts being negotiated by chat or texting by people in the same room. Even a divorce playing out that way. Children turn to their devices so often, I think, because their parents aren't paying attention to them and are distracted by their own devices. The research suggests there's a whole generation that seems to be losing the capacity to have deep conversation with one another. Perhaps it's no surprise that what we see going on in college campuses where genuine dialogue around different views seems to be eroding. Our lives are constantly interrupted, or at least we let them be interrupted. And this is all taking place as some narratives that once gave a sense of unity to American life are coming under stress. For instance, the narrative that there is a kind of inevitable triumph of universal rights, of progress and equality, and that those modern commitments and values enshrined in the UN and other institutions will simply spread inevitably all over the whole world. In a world of ISIS, that seems somehow not so plausible. Silicon Valley promises an almost kind of biblical revolution, right? There'll be a new humanity. We live in a new era of, we can, you know, get beyond all limits, right? There's new possibilities for everything. But that same technology is also a kind of almost totalitarian force in our lives that affects us for good or ill almost everywhere and almost all the time. And those, of course, those companies that promise us such liberation are always profiting, right, off of every click of the mouse or type of a key. Georgetown professor Joseph Mitchell says, we live in an era of the great exhaustion. The great exhaustion. These big narratives seem to be unraveling, and we turn toward our devices and away from each other. And he said that back in the summer before we even got to the Christmas shopping season, right? You want to talk about exhaustion? It's just getting going. What do we do with all of this? Jesus says, I think, has a message for us today that's very simple. It's not easy, but it's very simple. And it's this. Be present. Be present. Be present to God. Be present to ourselves. Be present to our loved ones. Be present to our neighbors. And be present to God's world. Without presence, there is no real connection. There's no deep connection. And connection is where our hope lies, in a world of fraying and unraveling community. I think presence begins for us by recognizing God's presence first to us. It's God's initiative that actually begins all of this. Turning to God is turning to one whose face is already turned to us in compassion, and whose compassion frees us to be present to others. And that presence to others goes through our being able to be present to ourselves, right? Being able to be in solitude, one of the things that's being lost by a world of so many devices, right? The ability to be in generative solitude. Christian spirituality, like so many of the world's great spiritual traditions, has deep practices of prayer and solitude, of deep listening and presence to God and to ourselves. And those seem to be somewhat at risk in our culture today. God's presence to us, our presence to ourselves, and then the possibility of us making space for, listening deeply to, being present to others. Not as people simply to manipulate, but as God's precious children in all of their difference and otherness, in whom we are called to, with whom we are called to connect. Our compassion for ourselves and for our neighbors begins with God's compassion for us. Well, today we begin Advent, which is this weird countercultural thing in our culture where, you know, again, already all the Christmas trees are up in all the stores. Most of our neighbors' houses, Christmas lights have been up for weeks. Everyone's, you know, already at Christmas. This week we were away a couple days for Thanksgiving, and there was already Santa Claus there, you know, ready to, meet the children. But we kind of insist on this weird thing called Advent. We're like, no, we're not at Christmas yet. We're going to take some time to prepare. And this is, our culture's already, you know, at Christmas or beyond. Why is this so important? Well, Advent is actually about slowing down and being present. It is a kind of protest against what our culture has turned Christmas into. Because we have the choice to decide how we spend our time, our money, our energy, our presence. Advent prepares us to enter into, to receive the story of God coming to us in precisely the places of despair, of dislocation, of distress, of fear and confusion, right? That's what the Christmas story is about. It's about Jesus coming in vulnerability, in circumstances that are as inauspicious as can be, as full of conflict and violence and empire and division as our world today. So how do we practice presence? Well, I want to invite you this Advent to try some small experiments of practicing presence. That might mean turning off your devices for periods of time, stowing them, not checking email as often. It might mean taking a screen Sabbath, taking one day. I know like panic is rising in some of us right now at the prospect of this, but taking a screen Sabbath where we just turn the devices off, say we're just not going to be available, not going to check, and we're simply going to be present to God and to ourselves and to others differently. It might mean intentionally simplifying your schedule this Advent, rather than let it simply get filled with more and more stuff, which is simply, which seems to be what's happening, of course, for most of us. It requires some intentionality to do that, right? One of the key themes of the way of Jesus that we talk about here at St. Matthew's is simplicity. Decluttering our lives, whether that be in terms of stuff or in terms of time, or energy, decluttering our lives so that we can be faithfully present to God and one another requires some intentionality. So if you're looking for permission to say no to some things, to pare down your schedule rather than let it get more full, you have it, okay? Run with it. It might mean small experiments in being present to neighbors. Even as there are forces in our society that turn us away from our neighbors, powerful forces of all sorts, what might it mean to go across the street, knock on a neighbor's door, maybe go into a different neighborhood? What does it mean to be present to neighbors struggling with poverty and injustice? Small experiments. What that looks like for you, I have no idea. But I invite you to try some things. Just start small, a few. Even as we think about, our culture shapes us to think about a Christmas that is highly materialistic, consumerism driven, where, you know, we're expected to, borrow money that we don't have to buy stuff that we don't need to impress people we don't even like, right? How might we practice simplicity through that whole season? You know, we're just not going to do that this year. We're going to do a couple of small gifts, right? Money is one of the huge sources of anxiety in our society. And we're actually going to be starting a course in January, for January and February, that's going to be unpacking that more deeply, called Financial Peace University, where we're going to have an opportunity to think in a Christian way about how we make financial decisions in our households. Simplicity, decluttering our lives. All of this brings us to the question of, amidst the violence, the division, the uncertainty, the anxiety, the fear in our world, what is our hope? What is our hope? And I think our hope this Advent is that God joins us precisely there, in the midst of the fear and the confusion and the violence and the foreboding, and connects us to the source of life, connects us to ourselves, connects us to each other. My prayer is that we may each find ways to be faithfully present to God, to ourselves, and to our neighbors. Amen.